there, beautiful people. Welcome to Fan Tribe, the podcast for all those complex and complicated conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I am entertainment journalist, editor, authoress, times dose, Trayvell Anderson.
I'm not quite drunk enough to understand what you said because you spoke so quickly, though I am holding my glass by its stem for the reasons that we will get into a little bit later. Jarrett Hill, welcome to the podcast. Childish. We are all the way live on recording from 1010 Wine and Events, recording on location. So if you hear the city happening outside, as it is wont to do, we're doing You'll something a little bit different for y'all this week. We're going to start off with something a little different.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, so we've got a new segment we are introducing.
What's this, a new segment?
I want to fight him. You know how sometimes you get really perturbed when a person does a particular thing? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's chewing with their mouth open, you know? Or maybe they're like Keke Palmer in the backseat of Madea's family reunion when she was popping that gum. Like she had no home training, you know? So you get perturbed, you know, when a person does a particular thing. But when you, us, we do it, it's cute or it's acceptable or it's fine. Inspired by that concept, Jarrett has come up with the idea for this new segment, which we are calling, It's Cute When I Do It. Insert jingle here.
First of all, I don't like the way how you set the segment up.
We don't have a jingle in case y'all didn't decide.
No, there'll be one. It'll probably include a body roll. I've been thinking about this for a little while because there are so many instances in life when I will find myself doing something that I don't want other people to do. Mm-hmm. And I've been like, I feel like it's also kind of squarely within the Fanti like theme to like be discussing things that are okay for us to do, but not other motherfuckers. Mm-hmm. And like for me, it is people ask, one of the things is people asking me what I'm doing, but there's an asterisk with that.
Oh, like, what you doing? Like, just randomly.
Right. It's one thing to ask me what I'm doing, right? Mm-hmm. It's another one to ask me with the intention of taking that time, right? I don't like when people are talking or asking me what I'm doing for the sake of them being able to take up whatever that time is, my evening, that day, on the calendar. Mm-hmm. When I do it, I'm being cute and fun.
Are you?
And like, I'm acknowledging boundaries.
Oh.
I am being respectful of people's time. I'm being curious. Mm. But when other people do it, it's very much like, I want your time. And I'd be like, no, it's cute when I do it because I'm doing something that is like really being inquisitive and wanting to get to know about you, but you're doing it because you're trying to take from me. Does that make sense?
Sure. Although sometimes you are also trying to take.
Well, nowadays, I am much more vigilant about the ways I ask people for their time.
Sure.
And instead of being like,
do I count as people?
All right, no. You count as.
Not to just have fully dehumanized.
Yeah, I was like, you count as 3/5 of people. But like, I would say that. I think there's something.
This is why they want to ban CRT in schools now.
No.
Okay.
Segregation now.
Stop it.
But I try to be more thoughtful nowadays if I'm going to be asking for someone's time to tell them up front what it is, right? Mm-hmm. I don't like people to be like, oh, what are you up to tonight? And then I'll be like, oh, nothing. And then I say, they like, oh, well.
You should come to this thing.
Right. Just because I'm free does not mean I'm coming to your shit.
Yeah. Well, see, that's why anytime somebody asks me what I'm doing, I say, why?
Exactly. But then it also feels like a very aggressive retort.
I'm all right with
that. To answer a question with the question. But as a journalist, I feel like I can get away with that.
Even not. I'm okay with it. Sometimes you got to be aggressive. You made me think of one of these things. It took me a long time to come up with something. However, I did come up with something. Oh. And today was actually a really great example of this. And that is being late. I hate when other people are late. Okay.
Can I pause you here? I don't like to interrupt because you know I'm an interrupter.
And yet you just did.
And here I am.
And here you just
did. I just wanna say that I'm getting hot under the collar right now. Oh, I'm getting so hot.
Listen, okay? I do not like anybody being late, myself included. However, when I'm late, I'm the party.
Hold on.
I'm the energy. I'm the razzle dazzle. I am that special je ne sais quoi on top, okay? That just elevates any interaction.
Go off.
Okay? And so, when I arrive, everybody should already be there. Why? Because the likelihood that I am already late means that you have a built-in 15 minutes. Because I should say, I ain't gonna be later than 15 minutes.
Okay.
I ain't gonna be later than 15 minutes. Because oh. I'm not rude, okay? Beyond 15 minutes, it gets rude. Okay, now I might be skirting on a 15, 16, but I'm not gonna hit 20. And if I'm gonna be late, you already know I'm gonna be late because I done told you that. Because as soon as I got in my car and I did the GPS and she said that I was gonna arrive at 2:40 and I knew that I was also gonna stop by the Popeyes before I came here, I said, oh, let me go on and send off the text.
Yeah, no, because that makes it better.
I didn't say make it better.
I will say our call time today was 2:30.
Yes.
I got here at a solid 2:29.
You also live down the street.
That's not what we're discussing. We're talking about what time we got here.
I live, okay across the Mason-Dixon line.
I just want to say, at a solid 2:29. Now, mind you, I thought I was going to be late, and that's not what we're discussing. But I also just want to point out that you are typically an on-time person.
I try to be.
But, like, if I am 16 seconds late,
yeah,
there's going to be a comment about how I'm always late,
yeah,
as if that is true, and it is indeed not.
Correct.
Okay, I just want to put that out there.
Listen.
As your friend and as your colleague, I struggled with wanting to support you in the I am the razzle dazzle and also wanting to say, now, bitch, shut the fuck up and sit down. But I can't say that either because I want to be a supportive friend.
It's all right.
But if I wasn't being the supportive friend, I would say, you doing a lot.
Well, you know, the beauty of this situation is I don't need your affirmation because I do it myself. Right? And I would love it, to be clear. But I'm just saying I don't need it, right? It does not push. It does not drive. Nothing's going to change whether I have your affirmation or not. And I love you just the same, Love Muffin.
You feel me flex my arm every
time you touch it? I did. I was like, ooh. Yeah, the girls like that. Okay.
We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into the mixed feelings, the uncertainty, the unfamiliarity with wine. Why we're here at 1010 Wine Bar. I'm getting into this Pinot Noir.
Wow, what a reference. What a reference.
I'm just glad you caught it.
The best thing about a new year? I'm glad you asked. The shifting of seasons, in my opinion, and I know what you're saying. You live in Los Angeles, y'all don't have seasons. I'd like to beg to differ because these last couple weeks, baby, it has been raining like foolish, okay? And the weather, right, has so much an effect on your mood. I remember just being so tired, right? Because it was so dusky and gloomy outside. And you want to know what came in handy? While I was tired, while I was not interested in doing anything, my Brooklinen sheets, okay? Brooklinen makes shifting seasons something to look forward to because guess what? In the event that you find yourself stuck in the home because of, you know, inclement weather, you want your bedding to be comfortable. You want it to hold you. Maybe even not your bedding. You just want a throw to snuggle up with on the couch, okay? Now is the time to invest in your space because guess what? The comforter sale for Brooklinen is here. Brooklinen has sleep down to a science, and they've thought of all the details to help you find your match. Their comforters come in three weights, lightweight, all season, and ultra warm. To make sure you get exactly what you need at bedtime or any other time for that matter. They also offer a down alternative comforter that feels like down, but while being hypoallergenic and eco-conscious. So, you know, if those are concerns for you, they got something for you too. And for a limited time, Brooklinen is offering 15% off comforters for a limited time. Again, listening after the sale, that is fine. Visit brooklinen.com today and use code FANTI for $20 off. Off plus free shipping. That's brooklinen.com/fanti. One of my new resolutions this year is also to cook at home more, all right? But I feel like I've told y'all that, like, listen, I'm not too much into the recipes, okay? I like, you know, easy to make things. If it's prepackaged and I could just pop it in the oven and pop it on the stove, I like that too. And that's why, guess what? You all should check out Wild Grain. Wild Grain is the first ever bake from frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, fresh pastas, and artisanal pastries. Every item bakes from frozen in 25 minutes or less. Plus, for every new member, Wild Grain donates 6 meals to the Greater Boston Food Bank so you can eat good and do good all all at the same time. Over the holiday break, I received my Wild Grain box, okay? Jan and I were actually editing parts of Historically Black Phrases, and he also got a box, obviously, and he had popped some of the croissants, the chocolate croissants, into the oven. And you know Jared, he a little extra, so he jazzed it up with some, you know, finishing salt or whatnot. But you didn't even need the finishing salt. When I tell you, that croissant was so luscious, so buttery, so delicious, and I didn't have to roll it out myself. All you do is pop it on the pan. I love that type of stuff, okay? I love that type of stuff, and so you should check it out. I also did, they had some frozen pasta that all you just do is put it in a pot of boiling water. You know, you spin it around, and it boils, but it's fresh, right? It's not, you know, the prepackaged pasta you get from the store. It's real good, y'all. Y'all should definitely check it out. Plus, for a limited time, you can get $30 off your first box, plus free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/fantai to start your subscription, okay? You heard me. Free croissants in every box and $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/fantai. That's wildgrain.com/fantai, or you can use promo code FANTAI at checkout.
Welcome back to Fantai. So there are a number of black stereotypes that we can name, but only one that matters today. And it comes from that which best not come in a red solo cup, unless maybe it does.
We don't judge.
We're talking about wine, primarily because Travelle and I actually don't really drink much wine, and we've kind of judged each other about it long enough. the most depth I think I've ever really gotten into the world of wine was a documentary, Somme, that I saw on Netflix years ago that follows a group of people who are preparing to take the Master Sommelier exam, a test that apparently only between 3% and 8% of applicants actually pass. First of all, the anxiety level around something like that. Like, oh my God, right? I should also shout out the movie Uncorked, written and directed by Insecure showrunner Prentice Penny, that tells the story of a black man with the dream of becoming a master sommelier while also dealing with his daddy who wants him to take over the family barbecue spot. It's a great movie. Whole
Niecy Nash is in it.
Listen, you're giving us the good acting and the real fun. Like, and so like, there is not a whole lot of like black culture that is immersed in wine, but as black folks have really been making an ever-growing presence in the wine space with more and more black-owned wines finding their way to shelves and more stores, we started feeling like our bougie cars were going to be coming into question. And we knew exactly who to call to discuss wine and its growth in black culture. The co-founder of Inglewood's first and only wine bar and its black owned. Amen. Please welcome Leslie Jones.
Hi. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so excited.
Thank you for being here. So, okay. How did like wine even begin for you? Like, where did that start?
Yeah. So actually my sister kind of got into wine. So she went to law school in Arizona and she was always like taking hard shots of vodka and tequila. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I got to switch this up somehow. And I believe a friend gave her a bottle of wine to like study with. And then she kind of just fell in love with it. And she studied abroad a little bit. So she went to Italy and Greece and kind of went to different wine countries. And that's how she really got into wine. And then that really helped us grow our friendship in adulthood, because she would call me and say, have you tried this wine? And, I'm telling you about this trip and all this other stuff. So then she would introduce me to different wines. And so that's kind of how we got into it.
Travelle, our relationship to wine is a little different than theirs now.
You know, wine is not my go-to drink, right? You know, I'm a vodka girl. Everybody knows. But I think a lot of it is also, I just don't know a lot about wine. I feel like you go on the wine aisle in the store and there's 12 million bottles. I don't know no difference.
It's really label shopping. Like, that was cute.
Absolutely. Right, yeah, right, absolutely. Right. And so, like, I feel like part of just, like, that lack of knowledge is one of the issues why I'm not really into wine. But I got thinking about, like, even how, you know, I feel like wine and its presence in kind of broader culture, right? When I think about, like, seeing wine in media, right? It has always been a bougie, highfalutin, you know, an upper class, upper echelon, right, type of drink.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I ain't where I used to be at, but, you know, where I used to be at.
I just want to point out, on last week's show, you made 5 references to you being in Paris over New Year's Eve.
So okay, hold on.
I don't want to, play this game.
Exactly.
But I'm saying in terms of, like, when I was coming and forming my let's say, alcohol identity, right? I wasn't thinking about no wine, right? I was thinking about some cheap vodka, you know, maybe a little Jack, you know.
I didn't know there was an H in Jack, but you definitely put it in there.
I'm from the generation of Four Loko, you know,
okay,
you all remember those in the name of Jesus. And so we just weren't thinking about wine. And then if you saw wine, a lot of it was boxed wine. And you drink the boxed wine, you're like, oh, well, hold on now. I don't know.
Oh,
I don't know why you drinking that.
Yeah.
Because it don't hit the way this fabulous Pinot Noir you have us drinking right now is hitting. And so I say all that to say, I think that might also contribute to, you know, just like my lack of a tangible relationship with wine.
Yeah. I mean, I think that wine is definitely something that brings people together, but it's also very like generational. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my parents actually didn't drink at all. And so when I started to drink, liquor, it wasn't like I could really talk to, you know, like my family about it. And then wine, the same thing. Like, you know, a lot of times, which is why I'm sure we're going to talk about this later, why I really like to highlight the stories of the Black-owned wine companies that we carry here, because most of them are like first generation winemakers, right? They're not like, you know, these big like Robert Halls or, you know, Josh, like these, you know, big vineyards that you know about that have been in business since, you know, 1880s, like they're new, they're just starting out. And so, yeah, it's not unusual for someone, you know, of our generation to say, hey, like I didn't grow up on wine or I don't know a ton about wine, because I feel like it's something that is kind of like cultural or generational.
I should say we are recording the show at 1010 Wine. So if you hear the city happening outside,
yes,
it is happening outside.
As one does.
I will say my relationship to alcohol, even as you were just saying that right now, I clicked and I realized like, oh, there was an earlier reference. This is so absurd. I remember being the end of high school, early college years, and meeting these two guys who were lying to everyone about being from wine families.
Wow.
And they had taken on the last names of like popular wines.
Oh, no.
Wow. And like Mondavi was one of them. No. And I didn't know that he was lying until years later. And so like, I'm like, oh, that was like the first reference that I remember from wine. But like, I know for myself, my parents didn't really drink either. And like, it was a moment when they were like popping out the blender and pouring in like a daiquiri or something
to blend up.
And so it was never like a big thing for my family either until I was grown. And I remember being 21 on my 21st birthday working at this ad agency, and they were like, oh, well, you'll never have this excuse again to like go get drunk. And I was like, yeah, not really. Yeah. Right. But so like alcohol hasn't been something that has been like a huge part of my life. I'm like a whiskey, scotch, bourbon type of person.
Mm-hmm.
But
that tracks.
You've met me. And like, I was interested in this conversation because on our show, we did an episode about weed. And we were talking to Chris Ball, who's the founder of the Ball Family Farms here in Los Angeles. And we were talking about how people have had various different experiences with weed. And he's like, you know, if you tried weed once and you were like, oh, I had this experience, he's like, you should try other strains and think about it the way that you think about wine.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so interesting because I never heard it put that way. When you're thinking about the different kinds of wines, like how do you even start to explain that to people who don't have like the knowledge of the different types of wines that there are?
Yeah, I mean, there are thousands of different wine varietals. So, you know, it's sometimes hard to kind of pinpoint what someone likes, but there's different questions that you can kind of ask to get an idea of, you know, what direction to steer them in. And so, you know, you might hear somebody say like, oh, I hate citrus. And I'm like, okay, perfect. I'm probably not gonna suggest like a Sauvignon Blanc to them because they're gonna get some of those citrus notes. So that's kind of how I get an idea of how to point people in the direction of what they might end up liking.
So this feels like a stupid ass question.
No, it's all good.
But I want to like get in here. So like on Somm, the documentary I was talking about, they would have them like going down to like such specifics of like, oh, I can tell this grape was grown on the north side of that area. And I'm like, girl, you're doing a lot.
Right.
One of them, I remember the note was like a tennis ball. Like, and I was like, why would you want something that tastes like a tennis ball, right?
Or like, but, pencil shavings. It's like, yeah, have like you had that before?
Right, exactly. But like, I'm curious, like, when people are picking out those notes, like, how do you do that? How do you think about like what the different notes are that you're hearing as you're trying to identify things?
Yeah, so sometimes you'll hear people say like on the nose, like what they get on the nose. And so like if we were to do like a quick wine tasting 101, like if you were to like swirl your wine, that's why people do it, is because they want
we're swirling.
they want to get some oxygen in the wine. They want to open it up, and then you want to smell it. So when you smell it, that's how your brain is starting to think about what it tastes like. So that's why you'll get things like people will say, oh, it, you know, leather or pencil shavings or those kind of things. It's like, it's not that those people have actually tried those things, but they associate the smell with the taste. And so when they smell it, those are things that they're smelling. And then when you actually taste it, then you'll be able to identify some of those things that they actually taste like.
So let's hang right here, Travell. We've swirled, and I have to know, because there's so much happening right now. what are the notes that you're picking
up? I don't know. This is, I'm going to be bad at this. I feel like I don't have a refined palate.
Well, that's the point. Neither you one know, of us does. And then Leslie can tell us where we're wrong. Because it smells very, like, floral to me.
Okay.
Like the first thing I think is like flowers and fruits, but like that's very non-specific.
No, but you can say that like it's not a wrong description to say like a wine has floral notes or it's fruit forward.
I want you to be like, I mean, this one does it.
No, it does. And actually, like, we're drinking a Pinot Noir from Santa Barbara County, which is a really good intro like red wine. So we have a lot of customers that come in and they say, I don't drink red wine. It's too bitter to me. It's too dry. It has too many tannins. But this is a great intro red wine because it's not super dry. It's not super bold. It doesn't have tannins, which is what kind of makes your mouth dry when you drink wine. So you are going to get, like, it's going to be more fruit forward. It is going to be, you're going to get more floral notes. This one in particular, like, I'm tasting, like, black cherry. So this is a good intro wine for people that may not necessarily drink, you know, red wines. That's why, you know, earlier when we were talking, I was like, we'll see if you like this one, because this is one that I always like to kind of start people off with.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is cute. I have a question now. Okay. I don't know if we call this thing that I'm about to say wine or not, but you know Stella Rosa.
Okay.
I really enjoy Stella Rosa Peach.
I thought this was going somewhere completely left. I'm not angry.
Yeah, this isn't in the script, okay? I'm going off the dome with this one. Because you were talking about, you know, helping helping people figure out like a wine that like works for them.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Stella Rosa Peach, right? It's real sweet, you know. Think you drinking,
it's fruit,
you know. Yeah, but it's got alcohol in it.
Listen, okay? And it doesn't work.
Listen. It hits what it needs to hit on, you know? So it's really sweet. You know, it's got a little bubble into it as well.
I love that you're trying to describe the nose. it has hints of
peach nectar,
notes of tarragon.
But I'm wondering, the reason why I say this is because I'm wondering, you know, for folks like myself who like something a little bit more sweeter, you know, what are the potential like recommendations in that area, that in that direction?
Yeah. So if somebody comes in and tells me that they like Stella Rosa or they like sweet wines, I definitely try to suggest other wines that aren't Stella Rosa. So the reason why people love
Stella Rosa. She said, do not drink
The problem with Stella Rosa is that it's so much added sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So with wine, there's things that winemakers have to do to kind of manipulate the grape, manipulate the juice to make it taste like what they want it to taste like. You know, like I'm a big, like, not processed food person. So that's kind of how I would probably stay away things from like a Stella Rosa. But there are grapes that are naturally sweet. So there's Moscato. There's
I've heard of that one.
There's of Riesling.
Heard that one too.
Of course.
And there's different grapes. There's different varietals that are just naturally sweeter. And the winemakers are doing less to make it sweet. So you're not getting as much additives as you are getting with the Stella Rosa.
Gotcha.
And no shade to Stella Rosa. Like, if that's what you like, that's what you like. But, you know, we have so many people come in here and they ask us, like, I drink Stella Rosa at home. You guys don't sell it? And we're like, no, well, it's not Black owned. But let me give you something that's an alternative that maybe, you know, you can like. And it's not going to taste the same exactly, but it might be able to kind of fulfill that palate that you have that's a little bit on the sweeter side.
Absolutely.
You talked about Stella Rosa not being Black owned, and that actually kind of helps pivot to a part that I'm interested in. Like, this is not a largely Black space in wine, and like, we're not going to get people to know what wine tastes like in a podcast, right? So I'm not expecting people to go like be like, oh, I want to go taste that one specifically. But like, I'm curious about like your experience of being Black in this wine space, and like, whenever I hear someone is the first Black something or the only Black something, I'm always like, ooh.
Yeah.
I know that comes with some things, right? I'm curious how that, being the only Black person, how that shows up for y'all and how it has over the years.
Yeah. You know, honestly, it's worked out really great for us, to be honest. So the Black wine community is very small. Less than 1% of wineries in the U.S., are owned by Black people. So the community is super duper small. And, you know, some people see that as a disadvantage, and it is. And that's why, you know, we have this spot. That's why there's other spots like this popping up everywhere, because we really want to grow those businesses, expand their business, have people taste and drink their wines more. But because this community is so small, you're able to kind of lean on the people that are in this community, because we're all trying to see each other grow and we're all trying to see each other get more exposure. So we're part of an organization called AAAB, the African American Association of Vintners. And it used to be an association that only winemakers and vineyard owners could be a part of. But then they started opening up to other Black people in the wine space. And so we really rely on a lot of the members of that organization to help guide us through our business. So we have people that are on the business side, and they're like, hey, you know, these are the wines that you should carry because they do really well at our spot. And then we also have winery owners that are like, hey, you know, I have this new wine coming out. Can I come and display it at your spot so that I can kind of get the word out about it? So that has been super beneficial for us. Of course, we have had to really, you know, stand on what our mission is here. You know, someone, you know, sales reps are like, oh, a new spot opened up in Inglewood. And we get people that come in here all the time, and they're like, yes, we just got this new collection of French wines. And we're like, okay, are any of them Black owned? Are any of them women owned? Are any of them LGBTQ plus owned? Okay, no, well, you know, we're not really interested in carrying them because that's not the mission of our bar. And so, you know, we kind of had to put our foot down about that, because we were like, well, this is the best of the best, or, you know, we can get you this kind of pricing on it. And it kind of makes you feel like, okay, are they listening to me whatsoever? But, you know, that has probably been like the most difficult thing. And people just, you know, underestimating my sister and I, like when we walk into a room, especially, you know, if it's not a room full of Black people in the wine space, like, what are they doing here? You know, what do they know? All those things. But to be honest, having a community like AAAB and having mentors that are in the space doing something that we're similar to what we're doing has been extremely helpful. And I think that's kind of helped us navigate this space way more than if we tried to do it on our own without those people around us.
Do you believe that everyone can become a wine person? Like, because, you know, some people are just like, oh, I'm not a wine person, I don't like wine. And similar to the example you mentioned from Chris Ball and weed, you know, his response to that was, oh, well, you know, try different strains to make sure you have a clear idea,
right,
of the different potential impacts. I'm translating that for wine as well. I'm wondering if you feel like everyone has the potential, the capacity to like find a wine that like works for them, and everyone can be a wine person too.
I mean, I don't think that everyone has to or wants to be like a wine expert. Mm-hmm. I don't think you have to know you know, what year this certain bottle of wine was made. Or I don't think that everybody has to know that. But what I love about wine, you know, black, white, straight, whatever, wine brings people together. And so that's what I really love about wine. And that's what wine symbolizes. And so with over... with thousands of varietals, I definitely believe that there's something for everybody, even though it may not be the same thing that I like. And, you know, I'm not an expert whatsoever. Like, my sister knows maybe more than me about wine. There's people that are master sommeliers that understand wine service and wine education way more than I do. So there's people that are like on different scales of the wine education, but the foundation is that wine brings people together. And I'm pretty sure that there's at least one wine out there that someone could like, even if they say they're not like a wine person.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious because you've been open for over a year now here in Inglewood.
Yeah.
Talk to me about what the response has been to 1010 Wine and Events.
From the community.
From the community, yes.
You know.
It's been amazing. Like, we really have been shocked by how the community has embraced us and how busy we have been pretty much every single day since we've opened. My sister and I always joke that bare minimum, like our friends from high school, because we grew up around here, you know, our friends from college, we went to school in Arizona, a bunch of them moved to LA afterwards. Our cousins and like, you know, our old co-workers will be the ones that will like sustain our business if nothing else, right? And so when we did our grand opening and there were so many people here that we have never met or never seen before, we were like, oh, that's cool. They probably just saw it like on the news or something like that. But the fact that they keep on coming and they keep on bringing other people, and like the biggest reward for me is people say, I walked across the street to come here, or I live around the corner, or I live five blocks away and I just took a quick Uber. That's really why we opened up this space, because, you know, we live in this area and we were tired of going outside of our community to have a good glass of wine, to have some good food, to enjoy good vibes and hang out with our friends. So it's been amazing.
I'm curious about how, like, I imagine you're having conversations about wine with people who are maybe new to wine or or hadn't, like, really been introduced to it in the ways that you have. Talk to me about like what those conversations are like with people who are kind of discovering wine, namely Black folks.
Yeah, okay. I saw you on Instagram. And I just decided I saw the girls was gonna come down afterward today.
We saw you on Ellen, or we saw you on whatever.
But all we do is drink Stella Rosa. But we don't really know.
But like people who are getting kind of introduced to wine, like I'm curious what those conversations have been.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's cool because people, when they come here, they know it's a safe space. And I don't know, you know, if it's because we're Black. I don't know if it's because we're women. I don't know if because they come in, they feel something, but they feel like it's a safe space. So questions that they have about wine that they may not have felt comfortable asking other places, they feel comfortable asking here. And so it's funny to, you know, sometimes people come in and say like, oh, I love Stella Rosa. And I'll be like, okay, I'm going to pour you a couple different wines. Let's try them. Let's talk about what you liked and didn't like about them. And then we're going to get you a glass of wine that you eventually are going to enjoy. And then they'll start to try it and they'll be like, is this a stupid question? I wanted to ask you this or that. And I'm like, don't say that. Like, just completely ask me whatever you want to ask, because I want you to feel comfortable going out into the world and, you know, choosing your own wines without me being here, because I can't go with you to the grocery store or other restaurants or to the airport or whatever.
That's right. I'm really interested in you talking about like how small the Black wine community is. Maybe there aren't distinctions, but like, what have you found to be unique about being with like Black winemakers as opposed to non-Black winemakers? And like, is there something different about the wine, or like, how do you think about that?
The thing about like winemaking, it's a unique experience no matter what you look like or who you are. Mm-hmm. You know, you can get grapes from Sonoma County, a mile away from each other, from 2020, and one winemaker is going to make the Pinot Noir taste one way, and another winemaker is going to make the Pinot Noir taste another way. So I think it has less to do with, you know, how somebody looks, but just the fact that winemaking is really an individual expression from each person that's doing it. So, you know, there's areas that are known for different wines. For example, like Willamette Valley in Oregon is known for Pinot Noirs, right? Because they produce like amazing Pinot Noirs. But a vineyard that is two blocks away can have very different tasting Pinot Noir. So, you know, everyone's life experience, all winemakers' life experiences kind of contribute to their winemaking process. But I think it's, you know, just kind of individual based on everything. It doesn't necessarily have to be because you're Black.
I have one last question.
Yeah, for sure.
As Jared was asking his question moments ago, we both happened to pick up our glasses at the same time. And I noticed how we picked up our glasses differently.
Yeah.
And you picked yours up by, I believe this is called the stem.
Correct.
Wow, look at you. The culture, the culture.
And I picked mine up by the glass itself. I don't know what you call that thing. Is there a quote unquote proper appropriate way to grab our glasses?
They want to know if their pinky should be up or down.
I'm just wondering, right? And like, does it say something different to you as somebody in this space, you know, if someone is picking it up by the stem versus the bowl? Because it says something to me. It sends a message to me that I'm very comfortable with personally. But, you know, some other people might not be as comfortable with what this might say. If it says anything.
Right, right. So totally this is a no judgment zone. But a lot of people are, why we suggest that you hold the glass by the stem is because there's a lot of factors that go into changing the taste of the wine. And so if you grab the wine from here or here, the warmth of your hands are now going to warm up the wine itself.
Oh, and I'm a warm girl.
And so that'll change the taste of the, potentially change the taste of the wine. So if you're holding it from the stem, however, like, you know, whatever temperature you have your reds at, it's going to more than likely stay at that temperature because you're not warming it with your hands. And so.
Such a simple, you know, like legitimate reason. I'm like, oh, that makes a lot of sense.
See, I mean, I knew that.
Of course you did.
Because I saw the Psalm documentary. So I'm really educated. Okay, so I want to just quickly get into like what you actually have Travel using the glass wrong for. So I know that we're drinking a Pinot Noir.
Yes.
And this is Charles Woodson's Intercept.
Yes. So Charles Woodson is a Hall of Fame football player.
Oh, this is that Charles Woodson?
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Okay. Okay. Yes, I do know that name.
Yes. So.
Do you?
I recognize the name. Don't ask me much more. Okay. I want to say maybe like I'm played on the Raiders back in the day.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Okay. You got it. So Oakland Raiders. And so really close to Napa. Mm-hmm. So he would go to Napa. Actually, I think their training camp was in Napa. And so he kind of fell in love with wine. And so once he retired, he decided that he wanted to make wine that was delicious and amazing, but was also affordable. Mm-hmm. So he created his own brand. So he has a Pinot Noir, he has a Cab, he has a red blend, and he has a Chardonnay. But all of his wines do really well here, but his Pinot Noir does the best.
Well, as a born and bred 49er fan, I'm a little bit offended. But but you also have a rosé for us as well.
Yes. So this is Lafite Rosé. It's the only Black-owned French rosé. Mm-hmm. And the owner actually used to work for Jay-Z at Ace of Spades. And then he kind of broke off and started his own wine company. And he's killing it. Like, he... If you fly Delta, his wines are on Delta.
Then that's good wine.
Okay.
Baby,
okay.
I bust that open on my way back from Paris.
Lastly, we have House of Brown.
So we have House of Brown. So Brown Estate is actually the first Black-owned winery in Napa Valley. And a couple years ago, they decided that they wanted to make wine a little... They're known for Zinfandels. So they decided that they wanted to make wine a little bit more approachable. They wanted a wine that millennials can kind of connect to a little bit more. So they created their House of Brown line. So this is their Chardonnay from their House of Brown line. They also have a red blend and they also have a rosé. And it's really cool because as you can see, the bottle is really pretty. And it's completely different than the branding of their Brown Estate wine. So their Chardonnay does really well here and so does their Rosé. And then we also carry their Chaos Theory, which is a red blend from their estate line, and also their Zinfandel. So
y'all also like offer for people to be able that aren't here in Los Angeles to be able to connect with y'all. And this is not an ad, by the way, right? But like y'all also have other ways for people to engage, and I'd love for you to be able to kind of share that with folks as well.
Of course, you can follow us on our Instagram page. We're always announcing announcing different events and things that we have going on. And some of them are worthwhile that you might actually want to come to LA for if Absolutely. You're not in the area. But we are, you know, on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, all at 1010 Wine and Events. We also do have a wine club. So it ships quarterly. You get two different bottles of wine. They're all Black owned. And we also have merchandise. So we have like, you know, really cool like merch.
We will have all the links in the episode description. But like, I'm just like excited that we finally got to talk about y'all.
Yes, thank you.
Over the holidays, we were doing Fansize Holiday Gift Guide and wanting to connect people with Black owned businesses and queer owned businesses and woman owned businesses. And so I'm just excited that we finally got to come here and meet you and bring you on to the show. So thank you.
And thank you for opening up your space to us.
Thank you.
But you didn't have to do that. And we appreciate it.
And also, thank you for teaching Travelle how to hold the wine glass. We're going to take a quick break. We want to know what y'all think. Hit us up on social media using the hashtag Fansize Fam. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Fansize Podcast. Coming up, why y'all hate us so much in listener feel like feedback. I'm and
too aggressive to hold it by the stem.
Well, I also feel like your eyes are a little bit lower and you haven't even had that much.
That's, well, valid point. I'm just like,
if you hold a little lower because it has this base here, you might feel like you have a little bit more control.
I'm gonna let them do that. Yeah. We don't take a
break. Go to break. Feedback and all that.
That's coming up next.
Parenting. It's hard, but don't worry. You're not alone. Belly up to the low bar with One Bad Mother and let us remind you that fine is good enough.
They want to climb on different things. And how am I supposed to keep them both from dying?
There is a right way to do this. And if I can figure out that right way, I'm going to be a good parent. So that is not a thing.
So join us each week and let us tell you that you are doing a good job. You can listen to One Bad Mother on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
This week on Bullseye, Tom Hanks, as you've never heard him before, mad.
You moron. Thank you for the use of the turn signal. Way to use your blinker, idiot.
That's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Welcome back, beautiful people. We are going to get to our listener feedback segment, your opportunity to tell us how wonderful we are or respond to things that we have said on the show. And this week, you know, I love that we have created what is basically a commentary feedback loop with the doctors who listen in to the show. We have an email and voice message from Dr. Diette. The title of her email is Invoked 2023.
I didn't see that.
And she says, all right, y'all, so I recorded my thing this time. I tried to be under a minute. Note that means my Trinidadian accent comes through thickish. I've gotten accustomed to speaking slowly because it's the only way Americans understand me.
You know what? We live.
Sometimes. Let's play it right now.
Hey, Jared and Travelle. Happy New Year. I initially was not going to write anything to y'all, and then I was invoked because I have a different relationship to this question now than when I was first trained. Before I started decolonizing my work, I would have been a bit more rigid and said that sitting still was the only good way to rest, but it isn't. I had a professor in undergrad who studied with Thich Nhat Hanh, and one of the first things we talked about in my classes with him was how choosing not to do something was still an action. Sitting still was still an action. We were making a choice. And looking back, once we start to interrogate the definition of, quote, doing nothing, the whole thing sort of flips itself on its head. And this does not mean that there isn't value in being still and doing nothing. There are good things about it, especially for those of us who struggle with it. We know this from all the research, and it's also true that not everyone is wired for this to be the way they feel rejuvenated. We also can't have this conversation without highlighting that even the idea that one should be still or quiet has deep colonialist roots that have been detrimental for kiddos who can't learn under those circumstances. This idea fails to honor the diverse brains we have in our society, forcing people to fit in boxes they were never meant to be in.
Dr. Diette goes on to say, speaking of sitting still, pray for me. I'm supposed to have surgery Wednesday, so pray I'm COVID-free. Oh, because she says, I skipped the parentheses. The parentheses say that they won't do the surgery if she tests positive for COVID. So she has to get tested the day of, and so she's like, pray I'm COVID-free. Anyway, sending you prayers and all that wondrousness. Aww. Hope you everything went well. But back to her voice message.
Yes.
Go.
Your thoughts, your feels. What was about you?
Was it about me?
What'd you think?
I think, you know, I like to have, let's put some music on, let's put the TV on. You know, it helps me zero in, you know, on whatever I'm focused on. And so, yeah, I like that idea of just like, you know. Oh, and then she said, making the choice to do nothing is activity. It is not inactivity.
Me laying on the couch with my feet up, watching the TV show and ordering the DoorDash.
It is an activity, right? When, you know, those types of things we can say, oh, that's not nothing, like, or I'm not doing nothing, or like I'm not being productive or whatever. But like it is an action. It is a choice that we make. Anyway.
One of the things I thought was interesting about what Dr. Dyad said was about how different people engage rest in different ways. I've been thinking about that and about how that changes over time, right? Because I know for myself, back in the day, I used to be a person who worked best with like hearing a television show on in the background. I used to always turn on things that I'd already seen that I didn't have to like watch, but like I could like be tuned into in my other, what I would always say is like the other side of my brain. And like over time, that has started to change and I engage that in a different kind of way.
Because you old now.
I'm sorry. Now, had to.
If I were to grab you by this top knot.
I'm sorry. You know, just as soon as you started talking about the change, I was like, well, I'm going to make an old joke.
But the funny thing is, you're the one that has the hot flashes out of the two of us.
Absolutely.
So,
but like, it's very tragic.
But I, you're like, I actually need to speak to my doctor about if Ubrelvy is right for me. I don't know what Ubrelvy does, so let's not even play that game. But anyway, I think about how it changes and evolves over time. And I know for myself, like you and Ray were, Ray Love Jr., who we reference on the show as being one of you people who was was raised in privilege with the Disney Channel original movies, were like sighing at me, like saying like, I've been enjoying quiet lately. That's been like so important to me lately to be able to just be quiet, but it's also something very new for me. I've literally only been doing that for a couple of weeks and like my house has been a lot more quiet lately for like my downtime. I feel like I've had a hard time like consuming anything else, right? I feel like I'm very full between my email, the work, the creative, the all this other shit. And like, I can't handle any more news. I can't handle another podcast. I can't take anybody else's opinions on anything else. I don't want to hear anybody else's joke. I don't want to watch anybody else's story. And like, those are the moments when I've been like lately finding myself wanting to just be like quiet or like chill or just kind of laying down. But that's different, right? Like I said, me even a month and a half ago wouldn't have been resting in that kind of way. So I'm also intrigued by the way that our rest and our work styles and all of those things kind of evolve over time because, you know, bitches are getting old out here.
Yeah. We also probably shouldn't just act like Ray Love Jr. isn't here taking photos of us as we record this.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You know, in case you've heard the scandal photo clip.
Smile for the camera. Ow.
In case you heard that in the recording.
Shout out to Ray Love Jr. who is here filming or shooting. Now it is time for our dishonorable mentions. These are the stories or people that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out either for their good or for their stupid. Trevor, what you got?
I just have one, and it's a TV show on Apple TV Plus if you have that streaming service that I recently started watching. It's called Truth Be Told. It stars Octavia Spencer as Poppy Parnell. She is a, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist who now has a podcast, and the show is about her reinvestigating a series of stories that she did almost 20 years ago that helped lead to a then teenager, 17-year-old boy, being committed to life. What did you call it? Found guilty and life imprisonment. Y'all know what I mean. And Octavia Spencer is acting as one does. Her husband is Michael Beach, the legendary Michael Beach, also acting as
fine
one
ass,
does.
Oh, fine ass uncle from Soul Food. Yes, who was Zaddy. Fucking Cousin Faith.
Yes, Zaddy. That you ain't had to go. You ain't had to go all the way back there.
One of the first asses I saw on television.
Wow. Thank you for that. And so, it was so good. I watched the first season. I'm about to jump into the second season. Somebody had given me this recommendation over the holiday break. I had tweeted something about watching journalism movies and just like realizing that like there ain't a lot of black people in movies about journalism.
Absolutely.
Even though we know the storied history of black folks in media, we don't have narrative depictions of those. It's really, really good, super intriguing. It's a drama, a couple trigger warnings and all that other stuff, but it's really, really good. So that's my recommendation this week. What do you have?
I want to give a couple of different shout outs. Number one, I want to give, I shout out at Snoop Doggy Dom on Instagram. Now, I want to be clear
that
for my homosexuals, Snoop Doggy Dom might hit you one kind of way, and it's not intended. Snoop Doggy Dom is a black woman who is an artist on Instagram, and I've followed her for a little while, but I was excited because I saw that she now has things in Target that you can go buy. They're celebrating Black History Month and they're getting in early. How about it?
As one does.
Listen, right? So you can, on Instagram, she is at Snoop Doggy Dom, D-O-M as in Mary. And Domo Inc. is like, her name is Dominique, and her products are called Domo Inc.
Got it.
Right, mm-hmm. You see? Because it's like her name.
Yeah, we got it.
Okay. Uh-huh. And you can buy some of her products at Target right now. And
what I thought
that
products?
Was really cool. There, she's an artist, so she does paintings and like prints and stuff
that
like
artist.
That.
Artist, okay.
And you can go, what did you think? Oh, you thought it would have been music.
I mean, you know, artist means a lot of different things these
That's
days.
Fair. I'm going to let you have that. Even though
you said Target, and I was like,
You're like, you're buying music like, is this exclusively at Target.
Of, right, if this Tabitha Brown collects, she got food, she got...
Not far away she from
got,
Tabitha.
What do you call them? Housewares.
You're going down a rabbit hole.
I'm just saying, she has a lot of things.
Welcome back. I want to give a dishonorable mention to the LAPD over the killing of Kenan Anderson. We got to stop.
Yes.
I'm not going to go like too in-depth with it, but Kenan Anderson is a black man here in Los Angeles, was a black man here in Los Angeles who's a teacher and called for the police to come and help him after some things had gone down and ended up being tased to death. It's a much longer story, and I don't want to like dig into all the details of it because it's a pretty difficult story, but I just wanted to raise his name into the conversation this week as
Absolutely.
Well. And that's it for me with the mentions. It's now time for...
Black History is happening every day. Alrighty, this week's Black History is happening every day moment. Because we are at 1010 Wine and Events in Inglewood, California, and this whole episode's about wine, I decided to delve into some wine history for today. And so I'm going to tell you all about John June Lewis Sr., okay? We're all familiar with John Lewis, obviously the late, you know, black representative, statesman, and civil rights activist. You may, however, be less familiar with John June Lewis Sr., who is recognized as the first black American winemaker in the United States. John June Lewis Sr. We'll have a link to this website that I'm reading from in the show notes. John June Lewis Sr. fell in love with wine and viticulture, which is a word I just thought deeply about during our interview moments ago.
And you're like,
I
what
did.
Is
and I said, oh, wow, what a word.
You said an educated woman. Shout out to Sister Leslie Jones.
Listen, he fell in love with wine and viticulture while stationed in France during World War I. Shortly after Prohibition ended, he inherited land in Clarksville, Virginia, and by 1933, he began to grow his first grapes on the land. In 1940, Lewis opened Woburn Winery and sold his wines to locals until he passed in 1974. The Woburn Winery is the first black American-owned winery in the U.S. and is believed to have been the only Virginia winery to produce wine solely from its own grapes at the time. The more you know.
Wow, thank you for that. I appreciate the note. That was really what I... something about you starting that off with John Lewis and then talking about John June Lewis felt very much like George Washington Carver. Like, you might know this name, but there was another one that was close to that that did some food shit.
Yeah, I didn't write it. That was copied and pasted from the link.
Shout out to our friends at the link.
So check out to the show notes.
Before we go, I want to say thank you to the folks at the University of Michigan's School of Linguistics there who had me in Ann Arbor, Michigan. First of all, let me tell tell you. A very cold place in January. Like, snow coming down. I had on all kinds of layers and shit. Mm-hmm. I had on a knit cap, which was new for me.
I haven't seen any photos yet. What's going on?
Yeah, we'll see. I had on all kinds of layers. I was freezing, but I had a really fantastic time. I met some really amazing students there. So for those of you that are listening, we actually had a full conversation about USSE.
Oh.
Our conversation last week, because one of the folks on the team that was there to greet me was a part of like the American Dialect Association or society. And we had like a whole conversation about USSE as a suffix that I love was that. Not prepared for.
Love that.
But that was really great. Okay.
Such a linguist now. Look at you.
Listen, we are academics. It feels like
that a stretch. Might be a push.
It feels like a stretch.
Don't do that.
It feels like a stretch. Every time someone wants me to come talk about anything, I'm like, why?
Oh, well, I'm not that way. You can always invite me, TravellAnderson.com.
Especially for the right rate, JarrettHill.com. I want to thank all of y'all for listening. We really appreciate you tuning into the show. Want to thank Leslie Jones and the Jones Sisters for inviting us to do our show here from the beautiful 1010 Wine and Events.
It's real cute, y'all. If you're out here, come on and drop on by. And they got food, too, okay? I didn't try the food. Jared has had the food
before. That risotto, though? No, you had a charcuterie board.
We did, yes. Leslie prepared a nice charcuterie board
for us. She's like, look, we're closed. You don't want me cooking, but what I will give you is this bomb-ass charcuterie.
And but it was really good.
Hitting. The food is fantastic.
All these different cheeses. There was a cheese with sage and a cheese with blueberry something or other on it.
Yeah, the way you're shaking your head feels very Jesus.
Well,
if you enjoyed this episode, we made reference to our episode on weed. It's called The Highs and Lows of Weed, featuring Chris Ball, where we had a similar conversation about weed, even though weed is not as unfamiliar to many of our brothers and dear sisters. If you are listening on a platform that allows you to rate, we ask that you do that with a 5-star rating. Let us know what you think about the show and why you love it. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's episode, we're at Fanti Podcast on the Instagram and the Twitter. And we're doing more on the TikTok soon, from what I'm told, from the people on the inside of the machine. And you can also send us an email to fanti@maximumfun.org.
As always, if you want to give us a little bit of coin to support this wondrousness that we are bringing you, and also get access to some very special members-only content that we are putting together and working on, particularly for the new season to come.
I feel like we should wear members-only jackets.
Okay, too much. Content. You can do that at maximumfun.org/join. All right. As always, our music is brought to you by the one and only Corice. That's Core.ece, wherever you get Slayworthy audio. Our graphics are by Ashley Wynn, the folks over at Moonhouse Creative. Our editor is Nihar Patel.
Our producer is Palmira Muniz. And our senior producer is, get ready, y'all, Laura Swisher! This is a production.
Like I had to be smaller because you just did a lot.
What was a lot of echo?
Yeah.
It's a production of Maximum.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
Shout out to Ray Jr. Who is here filming or shooting alongside producer Laura Swisher. We won't do that right now.
We only do it once in the show.
Right, I almost did it.
We love her, but she get once one time.